Go to Numbers, chapter 6. Again, you got to hear that, before we start, that the peace offering satisfied every requirement of the priesthood in terms because you couldn't take it until after you had the burnt offering and the meat offering and the trespass offering and the, you know, and all the other offerings. So every requirement of the priesthood and every requirement and full satisfaction is manifested in the apprehension of the peace offering. It's the peace offerings are of the class of what's called the fellowship offerings, and they express a voluntary desire they're called votive offerings, but the word votive, it's translated many times, just means it's voluntary, but it's much more than that. It means that it comes from the deepest recesses of your heart. It's something that bubbles forth in thanksgiving and understanding. It can't be, the peace offering can never be taken in ignorance. It can never be taken even in innocence. It's a voluntary offering. And the offerer gives it, and as the offerer gives it, it's then the offerer's children and the offerer's friends can share in the offering. But the worst translation in the universe is in some of the peace offerings are called free will offerings. And it's not free will in our understanding of the, it's offerings that bubble forth from the deepest recesses of praise and thanksgiving of your heart. Okay? Now, they were not required in anything except two things. It's a Nazirite vow. Let's go to number 6.
Numbers 6.
And again, remember, I have to keep repeating this because the peace offering was given after there had been the apprehension of the waters for the touching of the dead body, the apprehension of the ashes of the red heifer, the apprehension of the waters of jealousy when if there had been any fornication or adultery, the apprehension of the waters that connected with the turtle dove for leprosy, the apprehension of all of the trespass offerings that there was no mistakes, the offering of the sin offering that you didn't, you know, it was you that went, the offering of the burnt offering, which meant that all the demands of God were understood and satisfied, the offering of the meat offering, which meant that you perceived and knew that all obligations that you could possibly ever have to any family member, any fellow man, any Bible study, any, were met. And only then was the peace offering apprehended or given. And so it's the most majestic, the most, it fulfills this, it fulfills your heart's desire. It fulfills everything. Number 6. And that's why, and the connection here with the Nazirite is real critical, because the Nazirites, it had to be totally voluntary. It was an act that, well, let's read it. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazirite, to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, and shall drink no vinegar of wine or vinegar of strong drink, neither shall he eat any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried. All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. Now why in a Nazarite would, why in the typology would a Nazarite, could he have nothing to do with the wine? Think about it. The Nazarite saw, and this is the real meaning of the Nazarite vow, that he could do nothing but what he was doing, even if he ever gained no benefit from the mystery. In other words, if he knew he was going to hell, he would then still continue as the Nazarite, because he received no benefit at all, no sustenance from the wine. And that's why it's the highest order of all the offerings. I mean, of all the types. A Levite is, you know, up there pretty high. A Levite, by definition, can have no time for himself, can have no private life, can have no demands on his own time. A Nazarite, but he knew he was saved. A Nazarite, in the typology, the Nazarite had all of that, plus the idea that he would continue doing what he was doing even if he knew he could not ever benefit from the wine. You understand that?
Is that like in the seven consecrations of Abraham when he had to offer up the son of the seed?
He had to offer up the promises. The seventh consecration of Abraham is similar to a Nazarite.
Total giving.
It's total. It's total presenting yourself as a living sacrifice.
So the peace offering was to emphasize that it was something that had to come from
the deepest part of the heart.
Somewhere so.
So deep it was beyond words.
And so he couldn't participate in any of the feasts or anything.
Wow.
Couldn't ever take the wine, cup of sanctification. Couldn't take the cup of Passover.
I understand what you're saying about the Nazarite, but I don't understand the relationship of the Nazarite and the peace offering.
Well, because we haven't gotten there yet.
Oh.
The peace offering this is the only time a peace offering is required. Does everybody understand a little bit?
Yeah.
So, and again, you understand that there's no merit in us having Levites. There was no merit in us having the Nazarite vows. The only merit is that it becomes a living picture for us to see more of Christ, more of the offering, more of the apprehension. Amen? All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husks. All the days of the vow of his separation there shall no razor come upon his head, until the days be fulfilled in the which he separateth himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy, and shall let the locks of the hair of his head grow. All the days that he separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. In other words, he couldn't even go to the funeral of his wife, or couldn't go to the funeral of his parents or children. He shall not make himself unclean. Well, that's what it says. He shall not make himself unclean for his father or his mother, for his brother or for his sister, when they die, because the consecration of God is upon his head. All the days of his separation he is holy unto the Lord. Now, see in Christ, when Christ said, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and brother and sisters and wife, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. See its relationship to what he's saying here. Do you understand it?
Shall not make himself unclean for them.
All right, now, with that in mind, this isn't what we're studying, but it's important, because something happened. That happened with Miss Barbara. Let's go to Deuteronomy 13. Yeah. I think this may touch a couple of you here.
Deuteronomy
what? What I'm about to read. Okay? Verse 6. If thy brother, everybody there? If thy brother, the son of thy mother, or thy son, or thy daughter, or thy wife of thy bosom, or thy friend, and is the law here, and that's the altar, is that it's anyone that's close to you. Any family member, any friend, anyone that's close to you. Anyone, without exception. Thy son, or thy daughter, or the wife of thy bosom, or thy friend, which is at, as thine own soul, entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods which thou hast not known, thou nor thy fathers, the fathers of the faith. Namely, of the gods of the people which are round about you. Now, you can imagine, listen to your parents or your friends in this one. Of the gods of the people which are round about you, nigh unto thee or far off from thee, from one end of the earth even unto the other end of the earth. Thou shalt not consent unto him, nor hearken unto him. Neither shall thine eye pity him, neither shalt thou spare, neither shalt thou conceal him. But thou shalt surely kill him. Thine hand shall be first upon him to be put to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. And thou shalt stone him with stones that he die, because he has sought to thrust thee away from the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And all Israel shall hear and fear, and shall do no more any such wickedness as this among you, as this is among you. That's pretty heavy duty. Because it's not just enough to listen and not say, well, I'm not doing anything. It's that you must make it so clear to them that you are not sharing in their idolatry.
Almost like revenging disobedience in someone else or something.
Well, no, it has nothing to do with them. It has to do with your response to them.
Yeah. So otherwise, you become, it's like you touch it.
You touch it.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't respond to it, it's as if you've embraced it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you've prevented them from ever becoming a disciple, if you hear it. Okay, back to Numbers.
I never forgot.
Six.
Because
number 6, 7, directly
religious. Now we're going to 8. All the days of his separation he is holy unto the Lord. And if any man die very suddenly by him, and he hath defiled the head of his consecration, then he shall shave his head in the day of his cleansing, and the 7th day shall he shave it. On the 8th day shall he bring 2 turtle doves, or young pigeons, to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering, and make atonement for him, for that he sinned by the dead, and shall hallow his head the same day. And he shall consecrate unto the Lord the days of his separation, and they shall bring a lamb of the first year for a trespass offering. But the days that were before shall be lost, because his separation was defiled. In other words, it didn't count. Do you understand?
You've got to start over.
You've got to start over again.
Like after 6.5 years, you've got to start over.
You remember those stories? Okay. And this is the law of the Nazarite. When the days of his separation are fulfilled, he shall be brought unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and he shall offer his offering unto the Lord, 1 he-lamb of the first year without blemish for a burnt offering, and 1 ewe-lamb of the first year without blemish for a sin offering, and 1 ram without blemish for a peace offering. It's the only time the peace offering is required. Understand that? Except at one other place. But it's a little bit different. We're going to talk about that next.
And is that because he's coming back into the company?
Yeah. The thanks. I mean, can you imagine?
And he also has to share. Separated.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Do you imagine that he is for a little moment I hid my face from you? I mean, that's what a Nazarite vow says. I hid my face from you.
It's So he's been separated for how long?
30, 60, 90, or for 7 years, or for life.
So it is only like that, 30, 60, 90, or 7 or life?
7 years or life.
There
30, days. 60, or 100, excuse me.
In other words, they're roughly equivalent to the
60, 100 days. Yeah, they are. They're equivalent. Yeah. Yeah.
There's
only four. Can anybody name the four Levites? I mean, four Nazarite vows from Nazarites from birth?
Samson, Samuel,
John the Baptist.
Yeah, we only know the three.
Look it up. Was there ever a woman? It says you're a man or a woman.
There was a lot of women, but none for life. Go back and read your Nazarite vow memos. It's got all this stuff in it. Now,
it's a 6 consecration memo.
Let's go to Leviticus 23.
5 steps of answers.
The point that he just made, though, I want to stay on this one thing. The peace offering, the ram for the peace offering at that point was the place where fellowship was restored.
Yeah, but it had to be because it was, if you could see it, this is the exact moment in which Christ took upon himself the sin of the world. And then the moment he went back and experienced the joy of union with the Father.
Yeah.
The contrast has to be there.
The contrast is total. See, when we did the Nazarite vow before, I didn't have the guts to tell you that it meant you were cut off from salvation.
Cut. You told us that.
Yeah,
you
alluded.
That was good.
Yeah. No, I mean,
because
it wouldn't have.
Wine.
Yeah, because.
The wine?
Yeah. Yeah, you couldn't touch the wine.
Why did they do this?
What would your possess somebody?
I don't know why they would even do
this. Well, how would they come up with it?
What? How would they come up with this?
Yeah, why would
they didn't. God did.
But why would they? No, but it starts out.
It's the faith marines.
It's like. It just says when they will do this. This is what you do.
I know, but it comes only. Think about it. There's only been four that were Nazarites from birth in all of history. Every single time that the church, remember, Paul was a Nazarite on at least 2 occasions. In the earliest church writings, every time there was truly a revival in the church or in the ancient Israel, it was preceded by the long-haired heroes of Israel, is what they were called. A group of men and women who, for the sake of others, decided that this had to be done. And every time it was done, there was massive revival and renewal in Israel, or in the church.
And so it's almost like
it's a picture.
It came, the idea for it came from those deep places.
That's right.
You know, and people just did it. And so people couldn't even say you were doing something, you were obeying some law, because it just was happening.
Right.
And then the law came and said, this is how you do it. When you do this.
Well, the law was, I mean, no, the law came first.
The law was early.
Yeah, it's like, what's the ultimate you can do? Well, you would think, kill yourself. Well, no, because that's easy. The ultimate you can do is this.
Yeah, give your life and not die.
Yeah. Mm. And experience that. The ultimate you can do is be a Nazarite for life.
Well, it's like another picture, like what you're talking about of the Levites being a picture and the...
Right.
Because it's a picture of...
It's a picture of the whole church.
Yeah, and what we all experience at one time or another of having that face turned.
Right.
And so that we can have compassion, you know.
So it's a picture. Each one of these things, like the Nazarites aren't that, you know, they're not. They're a picture of the whole. And if we're blessed to see, the more we see of him, the more we shall be like him. Okay?
Yeah.
Leviticus 23.
So like a Nazarite for life is a picture of Christ because it's at birth he was separated from the place that he'd been before birth.
No, it wasn't at birth. It was at the Mount of Transfiguration. At the Mount of Transfiguration, instead of the joy that was set before him, he turned his back and went to the valley.
But he left.
But he had no consciousness. If
well, a little baby is a Nazarite doesn't either.
Well, I know, but hear me. You got to see it. He wasn't. I don't believe that. That's the reason John the Baptist is so important, because he's the picture of the Nazarite from birth's real function, to proclaim Messiah at his own expense, to have his head cut off.
And
he's not Messiah.
He must decrease.
Right. But you got to hear this. His head was cut off. That's the purpose. When John the Baptist's head was cut off, I mean, that's where you truly overcome the evil one. Everybody understand this a little bit? I mean, there was some of this stuff that
that's
I didn't have.
Gruesome to think of.
I didn't have the guts to tell you about some of this before the Nazarite vow.
Well,
it
worked. It's good.
It worked pretty good.
I will never forget the Nazarite.
You lost a little bit.
Oh, we have cried.
Or Barbara passing out of the backyard.
Oh, yeah.
No coffee.
Did the finger thing happen while we were on?
Yeah. Okay. 7 days, 8 days before the end of it.
But what I'll never forget is the surprise and everybody's face is when I called the vow over and they brought the wine out.
That's one of the best
things
I've ever had. Give me a cigarette! Give me a glass of wine, a cup of coffee, and a cigarette.
Yeah, the only two that knew about it were Paul and Robert, and they kept it secret.
For once.
There's something here really hit me about the, because I think we all, regardless of having not experienced or known it here, we've felt the times where there's no salvation, we're not saved, you know, come on, let's face it, you know, we have to go to God, and we feel that stuff. But then to know that in that place that you would continue, which I think you said it to somebody, first fruits.
I've said it a lot, because there are many times since I've been here that I knew
right, huh?
That I had no possibility of being saved.
Yeah, and yet, what can you
there's
do?
Nothing else to do.
There's nothing else to do. I just, that place is, it's really important to understand.
Yeah, because it's... You know, I'm still not sure.
You know,
I mean, there. When I think of my life and my screw ups, there's no way, you know. And my lack of faithfulness to what I see, and you know, just that's a perfect example. I didn't have the courage to say when we did it that this was gonna, because I thought that it would freak people out too badly. But there was too much other in it that I wanted people to see.
You know, we read that scripture earlier on, things in Deuteronomy about when people entice you to do things, and about even if you don't say it, you're like a partaker of it, and talking about Nazarites here, I was thinking about what happened to Samuel when he was a child and the corruption of Eli's sons. And the first time God spoke to Samuel, you know, you didn't know who it was at first. You heard this voice and you woke up Eli, and Eli finally said, "Well, it's God speaking to you." And the first thing, you know, God told him was, "Tell Eli he's going to die and his sons are going to die." and I think what position that put Samuel in, you know, as a young man, you know, he doesn't have any family and he's sitting here, and the uncertainty he must have faced.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, tell them about that, hey, that was,
you know, you're going to die and your sons are going to die because you're corrupt. And,
Leviticus 23, is that where we're at?
23 verse. Well, let's go start at Passover here. No, not at Passover. Verse 15. 23. Yeah. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, seven Sabbath shall be complete. That's hard to say. Even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall you number 50 days, and you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Lord. And you shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of 2/10 deals. They shall be of fine flour, they shall be baked with leaven, they are the first fruits unto the Lord. And you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs without blemish of the first year, and 1 young bullock and 2 rams. They shall be for a burnt offering unto the Lord, with their meat offering and their drink offerings, even offering made by fire of sweet savor unto the Lord. And you shall offer, and you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering, and 2 lambs of the first year for a sacrifice of peace offerings. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering before the Lord, with the 2 lambs, for they shall be holy unto the Lord. They shall be holy to the Lord for the priests. Now, what they're saying here is that the 2 leavened loaves plus the lamb, the 2 lambs, are waved, the wave offering. And remember what a wave offering is. It's one of the peace offerings. Remember? So, I said to you that there was, that the Nazarite vow was the only one that was required. I didn't say it right. It's the only one that's required outside of the Feast of Pentecost. But on the Feast of Pentecost, it is required that there be a peace offering. Now, think about what that means. You think about it, the only other place that's required is for a Nazarite, and it was the joy and the thankfulness of returning from separation. Think of the same idea. It's the birth. It's the. You know, intellectually, it's finished at the cross. You know, emotionally, it's finished on Pentecost.
Yeah, it's like it's God's day. When was Peter converted? You know, when Christ said, I pray for you, you know, you're converted, or that...
Well, all of the disciples were converted on, in that context, on Pentecost.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
So they came out of an unconverted place, and that's...
So did...
So that's kind of like what happens in, you're saying, the Nazarite... In a sense, were
right. They were they were separated. They were separate.
But they're
and separate is the meaning of unconverted.
Yeah,
it's like the day God found out he was a daddy.
Yeah. Okay.
What? Well, isn't that what happened?
They were permitted on the condition that the offer had met the requirements of this, of the water offerings, the sin, and the trespass offering, and of the purifications. I mean, it's... Yeah, I hope I'm succeeding in giving you some idea of the emotional import of the peace offering.
A taste of it when you said Pentecost.
Okay.
Well, you succeeded in making me nervous.
About what?
That's just one of those concepts, you know, that you... It looms out there in front of me, and rather than joy, it's something.
Well, but you've got to always remember at every juncture that let it apprehend you. Don't let that nervousness come upon you.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of like that, you know, it's like death. And it's just, it's as much associated with that as, you know, it's, maybe it's me dying. You know, I mean, I somehow intuit that I have to die in order to get that place of joy. I mean, I can't go on and in my own way and apprehend. And so, you know, there's that death, that sense of death associated.
Let me give you another word.
There's also, you know,
let me give you another word for it. Anticipation. Instead of apprehension. I mean, both of them look the same.
Yeah.
They feel the same. But so then apprehension.
One of them has hope as a.
Right. Yeah. One of them has a sure and purposed and promised hope, and the other one has despair. But they look and they feel exactly alike. So you never have to pay attention to this. You never have to feel.
That's another one of God's transforming traits.
Right. He transformed that. He transforms that anxiety to anticipation. Just like that. You know, and that's. I mean, again, let's just take this thing I just experienced. You know, I had to fly down to Orlando alone. I was in terrible pain, that's another story. But I had to go into a place where I knew everyone hated me. I had to sit down with a Gentile and confront. I mean, if I let myself, I could have had all kinds of anxiety and, you know, all of the stuff that would go on. But the only thing that's different, the testing is always, the feeling always comes up. And it, you know, that always will, but I instantly can see through it now. To see that no matter what condition I'm in, right there is hope.
Yeah.
Right there is the finishedness of Christ. I never have to rely on my own sense of it. You know, I had no idea what I was going to say. I mean, that's, put yourself in that condition. I mean, it happens to me all the time. I never know what I'm going to say. I never know what, you know, whenever we have a first fruit offering or a, I mean, every time, everything is risked, every time. And you never have to feel that he's going to let you down.
Yours is with knowledge, mine's an accident. I never know what I was saying.
What? I didn't hear you.
Yours is by knowledge. And I'm going to say, I never know what I'm going to say either. It just kind of stumbles out there.
While you're saying that, I'm seeing an image of a bride waiting in a bridal chamber for her husband and hearing the latch, and also seeing a wife waiting for a husband who is a drunken ogre who beats her and hearing the latch.
Well, burnt offerings could always accompany the peace offering as an initial expression of devotion. And the burnt offering also is another, it's just another aspect of a recognition that all of the demands of God are met. It's an act of devotion to God. Now, the fellowship offerings were made up of a bunch of different things. They were made up of the peace offering, and that's Leviticus, all of Leviticus 3, and Leviticus 7, verses 11 to 36. They were made up, a part of the peace offering were what's called the thanksgiving offerings. And they're used most frequently. They're talked about most frequently in the Bible. But it's still, when you see that, the thanksgiving offering, you know it's talking about a peace offering. And that's what you need to remember. And that's Leviticus 7, 12 to 13. Leviticus 22, 29. Psalm 56, 12 and 13. Psalm 107, 22. Psalm 116, 17. And Jeremiah 33, 11. Now, as I said, the thanksgiving offering is a virtual synonym for peace offering. And some more examples are 2 Chronicles 29, 31, Jeremiah 17, 26. And part of the peace offering and these fellowship offerings is also called the wave offering. And the wave offering, the Hebrew name is the tenufah. T-E-N-U-P-H-A-H. It's the priest's portion. It was waved, signifying it was God's. And that's Leviticus 7:30, did I say that? Then it was given to the officiant as his personal share. I mean, but the waving of it meant that it was offered to God, but then in his consuming of it was the recognition that he and God were eating at the same table. And it was the recognition, every time you see the word wave offering, it's the recognition that the person who is partaking of the wave offering knows that what he is doing is satisfying to God because he and God are eating of the same table.
Now if you know that, you got to hold something.
That's right. I know it. I never forget it. Now this is also used of these two loaves of Pentecost, and there's a huge mystery here that we were gonna talk about tonight, but we'll talk about next Wednesday.
Why were some of the loaves leavened and some of not?
There's only time, only once it was leavened. That's some. Once. And that's the mystery, and that's what we're going to talk about next Wednesday.
Stay tuned.
Now, it was also used, guess what? The word wave offering, the tenufah. Guess what else is a wave offering?
The Levites.
So we're going to go out there and wave hair. Take care.
Let's go to Numbers 8, see if we can understand. Now, the reason what I want to do is try to transform these words that are just talking about peace offering, wave offering, meat offering, blah, 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 into something that you can have meaning and get your teeth into. What? What'd she say?
Did you say that again?
When you say a fellowship offering, is that the same thing as a sweet savor offering, or is that specifically you're talking about the subcategory of the peace offering?
They're all the same offerings, but this is a different.
Numbers 8. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the Levites from among the children of Israel and cleanse them. Amen.
Numbers 8.
Take the Levites from among the children of Israel and cleanse them, and thus shalt thou do unto them to cleanse them. Sprinkle water of purifying upon them. Let them shave all of their flesh. Let them shave all of their flesh, and let them wash their clothes, and so make themselves clean. Then let them take a young bullock with his meat. Now why do they shave all of their flesh?
No covering.
Save the Lord.
It's kind of like the Nazarites.
The Nazarites Yeah, but the Nazarites, they have to let their hair grow until, because then it's they're
it's
covered.
Like a new birth. It's like yeah, being they, a newborn.
Yeah, but when the Nazarites let their hair, they shave at the end. But they're during the course, they have all of the natural coverings, you know, because they don't have any covering of God. Let them take a young bullock with his meat offering, even fine flour mingled with oil, and another young bullock shall thou take for a sin offering. And thou shalt bring the Levites before the tabernacle of the congregation, and thou shalt gather the whole assembly of the children of Israel together. And thou shalt bring the Levites before the Lord, and the children of Israel shall put their hands upon the Levites. And Aaron shall offer the Levites before the Lord for an offering. And it's what it says is a wave offering, a tenufa, of the children of Israel, that they may execute the service of the Lord. And the Levites shall lay their hands upon the heads of the bullocks, and they shall offer the one for a sin offering, the other for a burnt offering unto the Lord, to make an atonement for the Levites. And thou shalt set the Levites before Aaron and before his sons, and offer them for an offering. And again, that word offering there is, it should be tenufa, unto the Lord. Thus shalt thou separate the Levites from among the children of Israel, and the Levites shall be mine. And after that shall the Levites go in to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Thou shalt cleanse them and offer them for an offering. Again, the word tenufa. For they are wholly given unto me from among the children of Israel. Instead of such as open every womb, instead of the firstborn of the children of Israel, have I taken them unto me. For all the firstborn of the children of Israel are mine, both man and beast. On the day that I smote every firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified them for myself. And I have taken the Levites for the firstborn of all the children of Israel, and I have given the Levites as a gift to Aaron and to his sons from among the children of Israel to do the service of the children of Israel in the tabernacle of the congregation, and to make an atonement of the children of Israel, that there be no plague among the children of Israel when the children of Israel come nigh unto the sanctuary. And Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of Israel did to the Levites according to all that the Lord commanded Moses concerning the Levites. So did the children of Israel unto them. The Levites were purified, and they washed their clothes, and Aaron offered them as a tenupa before the Lord, and Aaron made an atonement for them to cleanse them. And after that went the Levites in to do their service. So the Levites were a peace offering.
Yeah, so in this cycle, they were given to the Lord, so they were his, and he gave them back.
And to, as
to the body.
Mm. That's why they were a peace offering.
Right.
And that's what, it makes perfect sense with the wave offering. Wave to God, and then it's...
I just said that.
Well, there's a difference between the heaving and the waving.
Yeah, but I don't want to hear about that.
No, we already did that.
No, but I don't want to hear about your cross for the nations theory about that.
Is that part of this whole process?
Well, we're not to the heave offering yet.
I didn't know if it was.
This is the wave offering.
This is the wave offering now.
We're just waiting.
Well, we're going to do first fruits on the Fergamesses this weekend.
I'll leave you my fastest words.
The problem is doing. Pam and Larry before they witness the other members of their group.
You're supposed to do it first or after?
It doesn't matter, but Pam said she wanted to do it first. But do you understand that I don't care, it doesn't matter, there's no meaning to doing it first.
No. It'll put me at a peace.
No, I mean,
like more at a peace of mind.
I think it would be better if you could do it later. I mean, ask Gary and Judy, because.
Well, they didn't.
We went through Doug's group before we did ours.
Yeah.
What do you mean you went through Doug's group?
You said
we sat in on some of
the because there was things that affected them.
We were softened up, you might say, the picadors.
Well, it's not that. It's just that.
Didn't invalidate all.
No, no. What it is that it's not. It's like.
Oh, this is kind of like the Nazarite thing here. I'm telling you right now. Whether or not you're saved or not, you continue on and do the first fruits, regardless of whether or not your own.
You put yourself aside, literally.
It's a Nazarite kind of thing.
And
I'll try to be spiritual and do that.
No, it's not a matter. You don't have to try. You just have to say, you have to know you're secure. You have to know you're safe. And then you can devote to, you can be in total prayer for someone else. Well, and anything that's said never touches you then. I mean, you don't have to see the mistake they made, and they both got yelled at it for, was that when I was talking with somebody that's, you know, all of a sudden they went, oh shit, that's me, you know. Okay, anybody have anything else? Take it, big guy.